Welcome to episode one of Just Talk, a podcast focused on criminal justice reform. Hi, my name is Sienna Craigie, and I am the founder and creator of the blog Chicago Students for Criminal Justice Reform, which was created from an independent study program at the Latin School of Chicago. On my blog, I publish interviews from people in the field of criminal justice in Chicago. My website has worked exactly how I wanted it to. It is a database of interviews, and if people want to scan the website to read these interviews, they can. It's worked. But how do I get these stories to a wider audience? These stories are interesting. I mean, I'm in a high school class of 120 people. I'm assuming that quite a few of these students will end up with a law degree. Criminal justice and criminal justice reform are the foundation of our system. How do I get these peers interested? How do I get these stories, which are fascinating, to my community? These stories are about morals and real, vulnerable people. Well, that is just what this podcast is going to address. I have no idea where this is going to go, but I'm digging in. I want to ask these questions. And I think it will work, if you want to listen. I was first introduced to criminal justice reform when I attended the Georgetown University Pre-College Law Institute. During the week, as we discussed how law works, we also delved into the flaws of our system, specifically through various wrongful conviction cases. One of those cases was the case of Michael Morton. In August 1986, Michael Morton celebrated his birthday at a restaurant with his wife, Christine, and their three-year-old son. The next morning, Morton left a note on the bathroom vanity expressing disappointment that his wife had declined to be intimate with him the night before, but ended the note with the words, "I love you." He then left for work at 5:30 a.m., arriving soon after. Later that morning, Christine's body was found in their bed. She had been beaten to death with a weapon made of wood. The sheets of the bed were stained with what was determined to be semen. The day after Christine's body was found, police recovered a bloody bandana found at a construction site located about 100 yards from the Morton home. Christine's mother told the police that the Morton son, Eric, had been present during the murder. Eric had told his grandmother that the murderer was not Michael, but a monster. He described the crime scene and the murder in detail and specifically said that his, quote, daddy was not home when the murder occurred. Furthermore, upon questioning the Mortons' neighbors, police were told that a man repeatedly parked a green van on the street behind the Mortons' house and walked off into a nearby wooded area. Police records also indicated that Christine Morton's missing credit card had possibly been recovered in San Antonio, Texas jewelry store, and that a San Antonio police officer stated that he could identify the woman who had attempted to use the card. But none of this evidence was shown to Morton's defense lawyers. None of it was shown in court. The defense had a lack of evidence, but honestly, so did the prosecution. The prosecution presented no witnesses or physical evidence that tied Morton to the crime, but they claimed that he had beaten Christine to death because she refused to have sex with him on his birthday. On February 17, 1987, Michael Morton was convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison. Michael Morton spent 25 years in prison before he was released with the help of the Innocence Project. Michael Morton's son spent 25 years believing that his father had killed his mother. How does this happen? And how do people not know about this? I don't know. But these are the questions I want to ask. How is this a hard story to sell? How does a story like this not prove that there is something wrong with our system? Why should an innocent man spend 25 years in jail for a crime he didn't commit? I showed this case and these questions to Robert Ibokwe, who is a sophomore at the Latin School of Chicago. I asked Robert how and when he became interested in criminal justice reform, and he told me he became interested the summer going into sophomore year after he read the book Just Mercy, a story of justice and redemption by Bryan Stevenson. Just Mercy is Bryan Stevenson's account of his decade-long career as a legal advocate for marginalized people who have either been falsely convicted or harshly sentenced. The central storyline follows the relationship between Stevenson and Walter McMillan, a black man wrongfully accused of murder and sentenced to death in Alabama in the late 1980s. A successful businessman from a poor community in Monroeville, Walter lost his reputation after he had an affair with Karen Kelly, a white woman. At the same time, the murder of a beloved local white woman, Rhonda Morrison, rattled the town. Rolf Myers, a mentally unstable white man involved in criminal activity with Karen Kelly, randomly accused Karen's, quote, black boyfriend of murdering Rhonda. The openly racist local sheriff, with the help of the district attorney and several investigators, pursued Walter's conviction. Together, they suppressed evidence, bribed witnesses into false testimony, and forced Myers to testify even after he tried to recant. Walter was convicted of murder by Judge Robert E. Lee Key and sentenced to death, which left his wife and his five children on their own. Years later, with the help of Brian Stevenson, Walter was exonerated. I talked to Robert about how these kinds of narratives are important. Here is a clip of our conversation.
He talked a lot about the injustices that criminals often face. Mm-hmm. And just hearing those narratives really, it really touched me. So, and that's kind of where, like, my interest developed, and I started doing more research. And, yeah, like, just, it kind of started off with hearing those narratives about criminal justice reform.
Yeah, and sharing stories, right? So, if you're ever in a situation where you realize that people don't really know what criminal justice reform is, or that you're around people who aren't necessarily educated or interested in it, how do you get other people involved, like your peers?
So, like, that situation kind of happens a lot. There are a lot of people who don't know about what criminal justice is, and, like, how big of an issue it is in the U.S. And I think one of the main reasons behind that is first because of the word criminal, and there's obviously a super negative connotation with that, because when we hear criminal, we like to make whatever assumptions that we need to, like, justify the way that they're being treated. But also, like, I think it's a really complicated issue that it's so deeply rooted into our society that having discussions about it feels like kind of unraveling you just start realizing so many ways in which, like, the injustice of others is contributing to your privileges. So I think one way that I try to get people onto that conversation is sharing narratives.
Robert's right. Sharing narratives is important. But what kind of narratives? These wrongful conviction stories are what hooked Robert and me. These stories are what made us become interested in criminal justice reform. But these stories may not hook my audience. I understand that. So what will? Well, criminal justice reform is not solely wrongful conviction cases. It is sentencing laws, mass incarceration, bond reform, marijuana law reform, prison overcrowding, police brutality. It is reentry rates and juvenile justice reform. It is the fact that the United States makes up 5% of the world population, but 25% of the prison population. It is the fact that 1 in 3 black men will be convicted of a crime versus 1 in 17 white men. Criminal justice reform is broad, and maybe that's one of the reasons it's a hard story to sell. Thank you to Robert Ibokwe for being on this episode, and thank you to Miss Door for sponsoring it. Next episode on Just Talk, we will be talking about hard-to-tell stories. Make sure to tune in.